Good morning. Welcome to Shabbat study. It's January 16th, 2016. And we are following the triennial cycle of the parasha, which means we are at Genesis 17 this morning. And maybe, since there's a couple of new faces and we're a small enough group, can everyone just say their name? We'll go around the circle quickly.
Gemma.
Florence.
Yoitzi.
Yoitzi.
Daniel.
Valerie.
David.
Nadine. I'm Sharon. And Gary will come in a second. Welcome, everyone. Okay, so we've been following this cycle, basically going through Genesis at a slow pace. We've taken chapters at a time. And now I'm chapter 17. And we're going to be looking both at chapter 17 and its connections to the Haftarah, which is the prophet portion that they found that's connected to this portion in the Torah. So the Haftarah, we have two sections for today. One is Isaiah 54, verse 10 and following. And if you notice, that's a continuation of the Haftarah from last week, which was Genesis 54, verses 1 through 10. So that part's interesting. And then Jeremiah 33, verses 25 to 34, verses 5, and then also verse 12 to 13. So
what was that 5? I think there was a typo.
To verse 5. No, it's chapter 33:25, which is at the very end of chapter 33,
right,
into chapter 34, verse 5. That's the chunk that they found. And then also verses 12 to 13. So basically,
in chapter 34.
In chapter 34, yeah. So you can just read the first bit of 34 until chapter 12 to 13.
I couldn't make any sense of where that 5 was.
Okay.
Sorry.
So maybe we will read... Basically, chapter 17 of Genesis has several elements we can be looking at. And so maybe we'll read them in chunks and discuss that part before moving on, instead of reading the whole thing. So if you remember chapter 16, we had Hagar and Ishmael, and she had run away, and an angel met her, and she came back, and she had a baby. Since the last verse, you can look at the last verse right now, you will notice, what
Abraham
does it say?
Was 86.
He was 86 when Hagar birthed him Ishmael. And what do we have in verse 1 of chapter 17?
He's
99. So we've had 13 years just pass, like, boom. And I would say that's true of life. 13 years can just go by. But we will read, maybe, Gemma, you can start reading for us. And let's see, we'll read until till Abraham's, the word from God to Abraham is done.
Okay.
So start reading.
When Abraham was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, "I am God Almighty, El Shaddai. Walk before me faithfully and blameless. Then I will make my covenant between me and you and will greatly increase your numbers." Abraham fell face down and said to him, "As for me, this is my covenant with you. You will be the father of many nations. No longer will you be called Abraham. Your name will be called Avraham. For I have made you a father of many nations. I will make you fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings will come from you. I will establish my covenant as an everlasting covenant between me and you and your descendants after you for the generations to come, to be your God and the God of your descendants after you. The whole land of Canaan, where you now reside as a foreigner, I will give as an everlasting possession to you and to your descendants after you, and I will be their God." Then God said to Abraham, "As for you, you must keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you, for the generations to come. This is my covenant with you and your descendants after you, the covenant you are to keep. Every male among you shall be circumcised. You are to undergo circumcision, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and you. For the generations to come, every male among you who is 8 days old must be circumcised. including those born in your household or bought with money from a foreigner, those who are not your offspring. Whether born in your household or bought with your money, they must be circumcised. My covenant in your flesh is to be an everlasting covenant. Any uncircumcised male who has not been circumcised in the flesh will be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. God also said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of nations. Kings of people will come from her.
Okay.
Should I stop there? The last bit where Abraham reacts. No, I think stop.
Yeah, because then we still do the
the baby thing in a minute.
Well, we've just been given a blessing of Sarah. That's kind of including the baby.
I have got struck about the name changing and where it comes and how names get changed.
Okay.
But that's another story.
So, well, I mean, it's part of the story. Yeah. There are many things here, but the first thing, we already mentioned he's 99. God appears to him. Why it took him 13 years, I don't know. But never mind, because that's not what our storyteller is trying to tell us. But 13 years later, so Ishmael is a grown, I don't know what you call him, teenager. And
well, he's ready to be circumcised himself. So we have the formal thing for a bar mitzvah there, which I
never read. You can say you have a bar mitzvah age person, but the command was to circumcise at 8 days. So why didn't God show up when Ishmael was 8 days old?
But, because the covenant is with the descendants of Abraham.
Okay. So we have God revealing himself as El Shaddai, and he gives a command. What's the first thing he says?
Walk before me.
Hitalech lefanai veheye tamim.
Yeah.
Has he ever said anything like that to Abraham before?
I don't think, does he? Maybe when he came out
of... Again. What?
When he came out of...
Get up and walk around the land. Right? Do you remember that? When he first came to Canaan? Way back in Ur, he said, Lech lecha, get going. When Abraham got to Canaan, he said, Kum vehitalech ba'aretz. And here he says, Hitalech lefanai. Walk before me.
But does he ever say, walk before me? I mean, all the other lech lecha and things like that.
No, Hitalech ba'aretz, he said before. Walk in the land. Walk around the land. And if you remember, it was strange because right after that, Abraham kind of wanders nearby where he was and then just stops. You're like, so what happened to walking around the whole land?
Well, he had come on a long journey already. So.
He had, but God had said, walk around the land. Look at it. This is what I'm going to give you. And he's like, okay, well, just sit here. But here, he says, Hitalech lefanai. And this phrase, to walk before me, or walk in my presence, is interesting. And it conjures up many connections for us. And also, veheye tamim. Be tamim.
Exactly.
What do you guys think of? You think of perfect, blameless? What is tamim usually?
Innocent.
Yeah, but what does it describe in the Bible usually?
A sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. A blameless goat or lamb for a sacrifice. It can also be... I guess completely innocent. Now, so what does being innocent like this and walking with God conjure up for you? Who else comes to mind?
Enoch
walked with God, yeah. But what about the blamelessness?
The
well, we can go to Enoch too.
Noah
for sure. But you want to go to Enoch? Let's.
We can find them.
Sure.
When they sinned, they were blameless and they were perfect before him.
Who?
Adam and Eve before they.
No, but I'm
It's not written in that.
Yeah, I'm looking for the actual word connection.
Right. Okay.
Because the idea is we could go many different places. But you're right that Lehitalech does come in the Garden of Eden, but instead of the person, it's God. God walking around the garden, or the voice of God. It's actually ambiguous whether it's the sound of God walking around or if it's God's sound that's walking around. That makes sense. It could be read either way.
Or did they hear his footsteps?
It says, Vaishme'u et kol Adonai Elohim mitalech bagan. So is the kol the one that is walking around, or is it Elohim who's walking around and making a noise? Okay, so Genesis 5:22, we have Vayitalech Chanoch et ha'Elohim. We have, this is the verse we talked about with Enoch, walking with God after he had birthed Metushelah, or begotten Methuselah. Metushelach. And then we had this strange, two verses later, he walked with God, and he wasn't, because he was taken. Because God took him. And we have discussed what that could mean. It's curious. So there you have someone walking with God. Okay, then in chapter 6, flip over to chapter 6 of Genesis, verse 9. This is the history of Noah. Noah, ish tzadik, tamim haya bedorotav. So Noah was a righteous man. Blameless he was in his generation. Et ha'elohim hitalech Noah. With God walked Noah.
So in 6:9, Noah was a righteous man. Blameless is tamim, right?
Well, here's, yeah, tamim.
Tamim.
Right.
Oh, I've got that. And then we've got the hitalech.
Yes. So right. We have the same word tamim, and we have the same word hitalech. There are minor differences. Here it says et ha'elohim, so with, et with the usage of with God walked around Noah. So God, Noah walked with God, and he was tamim. And he uses the same thing, tamim haya, blameless he was. Where here, God's giving a command, heye tamim, be blameless.
Tamim is tav mem, right?
Tav mem yud mem.
Yeah, okay, just I didn't want to
Yes.
get it wrong.
Yes, be blameless, be perfect, in the sense of...
It's one of the four sons in Pesach.
That's right.
Tam.
Well, Tam. Tam is related to Tamim. They're from the same root. It's not the exact same form. So we can talk about the difference why with one is walking with God is one, what does it mean to walk before God in God's presence? Is that difference just because now Abraham's living in this land, and this is where God's chosen to put his presence kind of thing? Or is there some nuance there? But there's one other thing that really struck me.
You're back to 17 now, right?
No, I'm thinking through 17 from the perspective of Genesis 6. So I'm
right.
Looking at the text in Genesis 6, 9, about Noah, and comparing it to Abraham in Genesis 17. And I'm wondering, Noah is called, the first thing he's called is Ish Tzadik. He's a righteous man. And then Tamim Haya Bedorotav. You know, he was blameless and he walked with God. And so then, of course, when you have these links, it causes you to compare the two, right? And so I immediately say to myself, well, why didn't God command Abraham to be righteous?
Because he was already.
And that was, yeah, that was my conclusion. He was already. Like, the tzaddik part you already have. Now add on to it, heye tamim, and walk before me. But then you could argue, well, wasn't he already tamim as well?
But he come from pagan.
He did a long time ago.
History, and
yes.
And now it's to walk before God instead of following after idols and...
But don't you think that change occurred earlier in his life?
Right, but it's been emphasized here, walk before me right. And don't follow up.
And be tamim.
I was thinking.
Yeah, and then, well, hey,
I was thinking
the
like
whole
it
world
was a...
has so many gods at this point. Whether you're in Babylon or in Canaan, their god idol worship is everywhere.
I was just thinking about the sort of the progress that you start with righteousness, and then you add blamelessness, and then finally you walk before me. It's like you can't walk before me, or walk with me, or walk in my presence until you've got.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because what is the difference really between blamelessness and righteousness?
Well, righteousness is a right relationship with God, whatever that means, and blameless means you don't let anything get in the way.
Well, it could be, you could say it's a right relationship with God. When you see righteousness in the Bible, it's definitely an action most of the time. It's doing the right thing.
Right.
So whether it's, there's several words that we translate righteous. We have tzedek and we have tzedakah. Today, tzedakah has been taken to refer to a specific form of righteousness as charity giving. Yeah. Tzedakah today only means giving charity.
So maybe one is doing the right thing, the other is not doing the wrong thing.
Blameless is not doing the wrong thing? Maybe.
Blameless.
Well, you think of Noah.
That's good.
Noah was tamim haya bedorotav. He wasn't perfectly tamim, but for his generation, he was tamim. So he didn't do the wrong thing.
But it's also his generation. So it's his generation, whereas now you come to Abraham and we're talking about...
Just be tamim.
Whatever's going to happen is going to go on not just for your descendants, but for all generations. I mean, it becomes a very, very long-standing... commitment by the Almighty.
Now, if we're thinking about Abraham and Noah, what else comes to mind? Maybe many things come to mind. They both walk before God. They're both blameless. And Noah is mentioned as a righteous man, but we know that Abraham is also righteous. He's also faithful. We had in chapter 15, he had a practice of believing in God.
They become subjects of covenants.
They both had covenants, right? What was Noah's covenant?
The rainbow.
The rainbow after the flood. And God promised never to bring the flood again. This is my sign of the covenant. And that particular, the sign of the covenant, Ot Brit, is specific to these two people in the Bible, Abraham and Noah.
But Noah had the covenant given after he obeyed, but before Abraham started his walk, the covenant was given.
That's true.
Well, I'm not sure. In the word brit, he had a calling before.
Right.
But that calling kept getting more and more defined. As we're reading through these chapters, we get little bits more information. Because at first he says, I'm going to make you a great nation.
Right.
God doesn't say how he's going to do it. Maybe Abraham thought through Lot, through some other way of adoption. Then he says, no, it's going to be through your body.
Right.
And that's pretty crazy. And so then he gets Hagar and he has Ishmael. And now he's going to say, no, it's not just you, it's you and Sarah. Sarah's going to have a son. So it keeps, you get elements. But in terms of a covenant... We've had a covenant in chapter 15 with the covenant pieces. Back in Ur, I don't think there's a covenant mentioned.
No.
Brit.
No, I'm sure not.
So to say he got the covenant before he obeyed, I'd say no. He has been in the process of obeying that first call, and then as he's obeyed, it's been solidified more and more,
right.
And to the point where you get an everlasting covenant. Even chapter 15, I don't think, is Brit Olam. We can check on that. But yeah, both of them.
And you could also say that at this point, Abraham basically goes on trusting the Lord. in a most dramatic way. We don't have Hagar and whatever. Whereas with Noah, he gets the covenant, and yet the first thing he's told to go in with his wife and family and so on and so on and so on into the ark, and then God says, you're to come out with your... He comes out in the same order as he went in.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, he... I mean, I've just been working on this quite a bit lately. He actually breaks... He stops the process which God has started.
Why?
Because it's all to do with the relationship of man to woman and so on. Don't let's go down that line.
Okay,
now.
Let's not go down
but
that line.
But I'm just thinking that Noah... Things begin to stop after Noah, not to mention his kids and all the things that go on. Whereas with Abraham, there's a consistency which goes on, and he does have Isaac, and he does offer Isaac, and so on and so on.
Abraham definitely has consistency. And I do like this connection back to Noah, because sometimes it helps you fill in the blank by comparing. So the blank we filled in is Tzaddik. We have the command from God to Abraham, be blameless, walk around before me, which could mean serve me, essentially, and be blameless. And then when we compare to Noah, we get that Noah was righteous and walked with God and was blameless. And so that helps us say, hey, Abraham was also righteous. And maybe the key of righteousness is something that we can follow into the parash, the Haftarah. So we had to go from our text back to earlier text to get that key to link to the Haftarah portions with tzedek or tzedakah. There is another thing. It's just interesting. I'll give you two more verses. If you're looking at the avot, the fathers, and what we think of it when we think of the fathers, this hitalech keeps coming back. I will read you Genesis 24:40.
Genesis what?
24, verse 40. Vayomer elai, Adonai asher hithalachti lefanav, yishlach malacho itach, vehitzliach darkecha, velakachta isha livni mimishpachti umibet avi. So here we have Abram said, he answered, the Lord before whom I have walked will send his angel with you. He will make your journey a success, and you will find a wife for my son from among my relatives, from my father's family.
Can kind of mean side by side, and walking right by God, with God, right?
Hitalech just means to walk around.
Walk around.
But it does have this repetitive nature built in. When you walk around, you're not taking one step, right? It's a continual thing. So how you interpret that, I mean, we use the same kind of metaphor today in English. We have a walk with God, right? I don't know if you do in some other languages that are represented at the table, but
relationship.
You could call it a relationship. Yeah, you have a relationship with God. And here, Abram says, I have walked around before him. And it can, in the NET Bible notes, they say, means living one's life. This statement may simply refer to serving the Lord, or it may have a more positive moral connotation, like serve faithfully. I'd go with the latter two. But here they've connected it to serving the Lord. And so Abraham says, I've served the Lord, and he's going to send his angel with you, and he's going to make you succeed on your way, because I've served the Lord, basically. And then in Genesis 48:15... we have a blessing from Jacob to Joseph. Vayvarch et Yosef vayomar ha'elohim asher hithalchu avotai lefanav Avraham ve'itzhak ha'elohim haro'eoti. So the God whom my fathers have walked before, Abraham and Isaac, Ha'elohim haro'eoti, the God who is my shepherd, or shepherds me. Then he goes on with his blessing.
I have a question. Do you think these are nomadic people, kind of? I was just thinking about why the choice of hitalchu versus any other kind of verb. like not, why not standing before him or serving or something?
Right, because to stand before is a very clear reference to service.
Yeah, like
Elijah says, I stand before God.
So it's the same thing, it's connected to the idea of like a shepherd and his...
A shepherd walking around?
No, like they're the sheep and like God is the great shepherd or something, some connection with this ongoing walk.
It's interesting here, Jacob says, you know, my father's walked before him or served him. And he kind of says, and the God who is my shepherd. He doesn't say, I've walked before him. But it could be synonym there. I don't know if it has to do with them being nomads and walking around, or if it just has maybe a little more of this connotation of a relationship and a daily thing.
What is interesting in the Jacob blessing of Genesis 48, it goes on, may he bless these boys, may they be called by my name and the names of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac.
Right.
It's like we're going back almost to the very beginning where we're supposed to be sitting, starting today at 17, about this whole thing about the name getting changed.
Mm.
I don't know if that's an important link because I'd not seen that verse before in relationship to that.
Right. Well, if you're looking at a theme with the whole fathers, Hitalech is definitely in there.
Right.
To walk with God. And I would say that the relational aspect is certainly part of it, because we also have, you know, back in Gan Eden, God walking around with the people. And then in Leviticus, you have V'hitalachti betochechem. V'hayiti lachem l'elohim v'atem tiyu li l'am. So I'm going to walk around in your midst, and I'm going to be your God, and you're going to be my people. So part of this whole covenant thing with God is that there's going to be a relationship. They're going to hang out together. They're going to walk around. And then again in Deuteronomy 23:15, it becomes a little bit almost funny, where they say, look, God walks around in your midst, so you better keep your camp clean. You can't just relieve yourself in the middle of the road because God's walking around here. You know, that's terrible. Go take a shovel and get out of the camp. So that's a very literal understanding of walking around with the people.
Give me that Deuteronomy verse.
Deuteronomy 23:15.
20 what?
23:15. And of course, Joshua and the spies get up and go around the land. That's Hitalchu. Okay, so the other interesting thing that caught my mind with this walking around verb, in 1 Samuel 2:30, God gives a speech. Lachen ne'um Adonai Elohe Israel, Amor Amarti, I've surely said, Beitcha uvet avicha yithalchu lefanai. Your house and the house of your fathers will, this phrase, walk before me. And in my English, in the NET version, it says, will serve me forever. I really did say that your house and your ancestors' house would serve me forever. But now the Lord says, may it never be, for I will honor those who honor me, but those who despise me will be cursed. He's talking to Eli here. And you know, Eli, his clan was cut off from being a priest because he wasn't respecting God's rules. His children weren't respecting God's rules. So here we have lehitalech lefanai to be some kind of a service, right? You're serving God. Eli is serving him as a priest. And then, also in 1 Samuel 2:35, I'm going to raise up a priest, a faithful priest, like my heart, and I'm going to build him a faithful house, and he will walk before my anointed one all the days. And then in 1 Samuel 12:2...
Who's the anointed one in this sense? David, presumably.
Presumably the king, yeah. So here the prophet is the one that's hitalechin. Lifnei. He's serving the king, I suppose you could say. Yeah, he will serve, it just translates, he will serve my chosen one for all time. So that was 1 Samuel 2:35. And then in 1 Samuel 12:2, V'ata hineh ha-melech mithalech lifnechem. Now look, this king walks before you. So there it doesn't translate it serves you, it says walks before you, but it's that same phrase. And then Samuel continues, Vani zakanti vesavti.
I've lost that verse, 12:2.
1 Samuel 12:2. It's a speech of Samuel to the people. And he says, look, I'm old and gray, though my sons are here with you. I have walked before you from the time of my youth till the present day.
It's interesting, because we don't have that translation in the NIV.
What do you have?
I've been your leader from my youth until this day.
Okay. Well, I've walked before you.
It's good enough.
We've been seeing how this phrase gets translated serve sometimes, and sometimes walk before.
The beginning of the verse is, here's the king walking before me also.
It's interesting because we talked about Abraham being a prophet before. Was it 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And it's interesting that these people that are hitalechim are oftentimes have a certain appointment. You know, they're prophets, they're priests, and they're kings. You know, that's it's just an interesting connection. It doesn't mean everybody who does this is a prophet, priest, and king. I'm not saying that, but there is a correlation there. Okay. Poor Tzemach.
Does he need rescuing?
No. He needs to just go to sleep. Okay. I guess I could throw in one more from 2 Kings 23. Please, Lord, remember how I hitalachti lefanecha, how I walked before you, be'emet u'bilvav shalem. 2 Kings 23.
Kings?
2 Kings 20, verse 3.
Oh, 20, verse 3.
Chapter 20, verse 3. And then
it adds on with truth and a loyal heart.
With truth and a full heart, a whole heart, not a half heart, a whole heart. And the good in your eyes I have done. And then he cries, a big cry.
Hezekiah.
What?
Hezekiah.
We're talking about Hezekiah here.
Had Hezekiah been so faithful up until this point? I thought the whole point when he gets ill and he repents and he gets an extra 15 years was a sort of bonus. But he turns his face to the wall and prays to the Lord, remember, Lord, I've walked before you faithfully and with a wholehearted devotion and have done what is good in your own eyes. It's like saying, I'm okay, Jack. Is that true? I mean, I can't remember the whole story.
Well, he did a bunch of reforms.
Right. So he was an okay guy, basically.
Yeah, he did a pretty good job. And he cried a big cry here, so.
Right.
Okay, so let's go back, before we get too lost on walking around, let's go back to Genesis 17.
So walking before might mean they have repented also. Not that they were without sin, but they've walked, they repented, they tried to walk again with God.
Well, hitalech lefanai. It's this nice metaphor that you can keep getting meaning from. But to walk before God, to have a relationship with him, to serve him, I think these are all parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And being blameless. And this is what Abraham is asked to do.
You wouldn't like to write it up right, would you? No, we haven't got any chalk.
I certainly don't have chalk.
Now, also in Deuteronomy 18, the people are told to be blameless. Tamim tihiyu, Adonai Elohecha. And there the context is not to
serve other gods.
Yes, or do divination, etc.
So that's what. Who brought that up? Valerie, did you bring that up?
The gods that were around, yeah.
That part of that idea was to abandon all the other gods and worship God only. Yeah, the tamim, being blameless, is to.
Not diverting, but Proverbs 3, verse 5 and 6, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your thoughts.
Right, right. And in this case, there is a covenant given. And I think it's interesting, we just looked at Eli. In part of our search of walking with God, we came across the priest Eli, who had been promised to always have his family serve God.
Right.
And then God says, no way. That's the deal's off because you don't respect me.
Is it so, that you don't, Eli don't respect me, or it's his sons who are running amok?
His sons is running amok, but he didn't teach them well.
Right.
So like, I'm not, on the one hand, I was willing to have a long-standing promise with you, but you're not
keeping your sons in
order. You're not even, you haven't been faithful, and so the deal's off. So that was interesting. Well, there are many things you can investigate what was bad, but basically they were abusing the system because they were choosing the fattest pieces of meat instead of they were supposed to just take the one that randomly came out.
Right.
And of course Eli had gotten very fat himself, so I'm sure he was benefiting in what his sons were doing. There's all kinds of word plays, by the way, going on there between heavy and light. And it even says Eli was a heavy guy, right? What kills him? He falls over backwards, breaks his neck, right? Because he's heavy. Anyway, but even though he's physically heavy, he can't manage to respect.
Right.
And you have the kaved and lechabed. Respect, the word for lechabed is respect and him being heavy. And the word kal is light, and kalon is shame. And so there's these respect, shame, light, heavy games going on.
Which is what we got into last week.
Yeah, you're right, we did. Okay, so then Abraham, after this, he gets a promise. There's going to be a promise, and I'm going to multiply you very, very. And so Abraham falls on his face, and then God starts giving him more. And he changes his name to Avraham. And to the best of everything I know, Avraham is simply a dialectical difference of the same name, Avram. But that's not the point. The point is that it sounds like you see a little ham in there, and that can match hamon. Hamon is a multitude, a lot. So we can say, we can play on his name and say he's now Av Hamon Goyim. So he's going to be the father of a lot of people groups.
I thought the whole thing about the name changed for him, for Sarah, for Jacob and so on, all the way through. It comes at the point when you're really prepared to face God face to face. I mean, we go back to the Hitalech. It's at the point when you're really walking before him, standing before his presence. And then later on, I forget where it was, I think it's somewhere in a parasha last week, I'm so confused, God says, I know you by name.
Right.
And we're talking about a bridge,
definitely
significant relationship.
In changing their name, giving them some kind of new status, new promise. Look also in verse 6, he says, I'm going to make you into nations.
I'm sorry, did you say the word for nations is goyim?
Goyim, yeah.
Goyim, yeah.
Goy, in the beginning, remember, God's promise to Abraham was, I'm going to make you a goy gadol, a great nation. Here he's saying many great nations, you know, tons of nations. Goyim, what captures me in verse 6, also, mlachim mimcha yetze'u, kings are going to come from you. And then I will put my covenant between you and your seed for their generations, brit olam. So this is eternal covenant. And then also the promise to Sarah, if you look down, he says the same thing about kings coming from her. After this little excursus on circumcision. And for anybody who cares, notice he always mentions every male should be circumcised. Unless you thought for some reason that females should also know it's every man. Please do not make that mistake. Okay. So Sarah, down in verse 15, she gets her name changed. And of course, what does Sarah mean?
Princess, isn't it?
Well, what's a Sar? Sam Memshala is a minister, right? He's a leader, a minister in the government. Today, Sarah Knesset, right? So if you're a minister and you're a woman, what are you? You're a Sarah. So this is a leader, a minister. So you already have that kind of royalty connotation. And then I will bless her in verse 16. And I will also give from her a son. And I will bless her, and she will become nations. Mlachi malche amim mimena yihyu. So kings of nations will come from her. So roughly parallel to the blessing we got Abraham. And then he falls on his face again. And he says, can this really happen? And of course we get the name play. He laughs just like Yitzchak's name. Can this really happen to someone who's old? And then he says, if only Ishmael yihye lefanecha, could live before you. And so God says, well, Sarah's going to have the son, but yeah, I'm also going to bless Ishmael. And he's going to multiply Ishmael two times over. Hifreti and hirbeti, right? And he also gives the very, very, bimeod meod. And he says, 12 great princes he will beget, and he will be a great nation. So these are all elements that have been in Abraham's blessing as well. So he gets a lot of that same blessing, but the brit, this special covenant, I'm going to have with Yitzhak. And he's the one that Sarah's going to have. Okay, so after that, God leaves him. I want to go quickly to the Haftarot, or we're not going to get there today. I personally found more connections in the Jeremiah passage than Isaiah 54. Yeah. But Isaiah 54:10, let me just 10 and following, which is you do have mention of a brit.
Covenant of peace, brit of shalom.
Brit shalom. Mm-hmm. And you also have themes of tzedakah and being far from oppression, not being afraid, which kind of ties into last week as well. And we have our nice little song there. Kol kli yutzar alecha lo yitzlach. Any weapon formed against you won't succeed. And that, to me, connects, I know this is very roundabout, but one of the passages we read where Abraham says, I have served God, I've walked before him, so he's going to send his angel before you, and therefore you will have success on your mission. There's that connection there with the Yitzlach. V'chol lashon takum itcha l'mishpat tarshi'i zot nachalat avdei Adonai. V'tzit katam me'iti. And their righteousness is from me. So that can go back to the whole theme of being blameless and righteous. Did anyone else read this through the week and have more connections? Isaiah 54:10 and on.
I didn't have connections with Jerusalem, which I thought was should be there, but I couldn't see it.
Well, there is Jerusalem, yeah.
I know, it's all about, yeah, but I couldn't
see
it.
Well, there's one more connection. If we're talking about this passage is the one, particularly in Genesis 17, is the one that links Abraham to Noah in his character and service of God, using those same collocisms, or same phrases that describe both. And here, there's just been mentioned in verse 9 of Noah's time. Yeah. And when I vowed the waters of Noah's flood would never again cover the earth. That was verse 9. And that's how the last prophet section ends. And then we start verse 10. Even if the mountains are removed and the hills displaced, my devotion will not be removed from you, nor will my covenant of friendship be displaced.
You've got covenant.
Well, they're translating shalom. Brit shalom.
Yeah.
And they're saying it. I think they're translating in the same way one of the offerings, the peace offering, is basically a friendship offering, where people get together and eat together.
But it is shalom.
Yeah, it's shalom, brit shalom. Okay. And then, and he's talking to Jerusalem because he goes on, O afflicted one, driven away and unconsoled, look, I'm about to set your stones in antimony, and I lay your foundation with lapis lazuli. I will make your pinnacles out of gems, your gates out of beryl, and your outer wall out of beautiful stones. So he's certainly talking to the city, the walled city of Jerusalem. Also, your children will be followers of the Lord, and your children will enjoy great prosperity.
In Hebrew, in 13, is that word prosperity shalom?
Yes, and it's interesting. Listen to the verse 13. V'chol banaych limudei Adonai. All your children will be learned of the Lord. V'rav shlom banaych. Oh, so that could also be a connection to our parasha. The rav, harbe, Abraham is promised to be a father of many nations, and he uses this word rav, great or many. And so here, what is great and much is the shalom, the prosperity or the peace or the well-being of the sons. V'rav shlom banaych. And there, if you're reading it out loud, rav shlom, you can kind of hear some of the words of Yerushalayim. It could also be playing off of Jerusalem. This, because he's talking to Jerusalem, right, about the walls. So you have Rav Shalom as a blessing. And then, right after in verse 14, there's that tzedakah again. Bitzdakah tikonani. You will be reestablished when I vindicate you. Well, it loses it. You will be reestablished in justice. You will be far from oppression. But actually, it doesn't say you will be far from. It says be far from oppression. Yikes. That's very different, I think.
In 14, in righteousness, it really is in re-righteousness. Re-established.
It's in the word staka.
Yeah, that's
tikonani, to be established.
But I've got, in righteousness you will be established. And you said just now, in righteousness you will be re-established.
Yeah, well, they're just filling that in historically.
I see, so you're not saying that that's there in the script.
The scripture says, tikonani,
just established.
You will be established.
Okay, that's
right.
Fine.
But if you're interpreting this as a promise given when it's not, Jerusalem is not established,
right?
But it used to be established,
so
you translate re-established.
So
but that's a minor, I don't think there's any substantial difference of meaning there.
So you're saying it's a command here, be far from oppression?
Yes, it says be, rahaki. You be very far from oshek, from oppression.
It's constantly, you shall be.
Yeah. Well, my translation says you will be. You will be reestablished when I vindicate you. You will not experience oppression. Indeed, you will not be afraid. Why it goes that way, I don't know. Probably
but
to
really,
fit in with kilo tirai.
It's tyranny. It's like a command. Be far from you, tyranny.
Yeah.
Right.
Be far from oppression. And these are some of the same themes we saw last week. That staka, the justice and oppression. And then you won't be afraid, basically. Okay, so... And then at the very end of the passage, because your righteousness is from me. So God's saying, you know, when you are secure, it's actually my righteousness that does it for you.
And protects you.
Yeah. This whole promise that no weapon will succeed against you, it's because of God's righteousness in the end anyway. And this is what God will do for his servants because it's based on his righteousness. Okay, so quickly we'll look at, we got 5 minutes. To look at Jeremiah. We're going to look at chapter 33, beginning with verse 25. Jeremiah 33:25, and that's one of the last verses of the chapter. Okay. So thus says the Lord, but I, the Lord, make the following promise. I have made a covenant governing the coming of day and night. I have established the fixed laws governing heaven and earth. Just as surely as I have done this, so surely will I never reject the descendants of Jacob, nor will I ever refuse to choose one of my servant David's descendants to rule over the descendants of Abram, Isaac, and Jacob. So obviously we have a direct reference to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as the fathers, right? They're the fathers. And we have this mention of covenant. It was also interesting that you have a covenant here. There's a tzemed, there's a pair, right? A covenant with?
Day and night.
Well, that's the parallel, that's the metaphor for its eternalness. But who is his covenant going to be? With the descendants of
Jacob.
And a descendant of David, my servant, which you think of king, right? So you have a king. And, I mean, I guess you could just say you have a covenant with Jacob and a covenant with David, and how that exactly is played out, I don't know.
It's interesting, it's all pairs. It's the covenant with day and night. It's the covenant with heaven and earth. And then we have Jacob and David.
And then we have all three fathers.
And then we have all the fathers, the avot stuck together.
They can be the stars. So it continues. Jeremiah's last word when Babylon is attacking Jerusalem to Tzidkiyahu. And I'll skip to verse 2 where it gives the word. The Lord says, I'm going to hand the city over to the king of Babylon and he will burn it down. You yourself will not escape his clutches, but will certainly be captured and handed over to him. You must confront the king of Babylon face to face and answer to him personally. Then you must go to Babylon. However, listen to what I, the Lord, promise you, King Tzidkiyahu of Judah. I, the Lord, promise that you will not die in battle or be executed. You will die a peaceful death. So there you have the shalom again. They will burn incense at your burial just as they did at the burial of your ancestors, the former kings who preceded you. They will mourn you, saying, poor, poor master. Indeed, you have my own word on this. I, the Lord, affirm it. So do you guys find that uplifting?
Well, no, because the last thing he sees is the eyes of somebody put out. How does it end? It's a pretty...
But Jeremiah spoke all these words to Tzidkiyahu in Jerusalem.
But doesn't Zedekiah get taken to Babylon? And he has a very dismal end, around muddling the king.
Wait, Tzidkiyahu we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and who am I talking about?
The guy who yeah, yeah, you know, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
Has his eyes
you're right. You're right. Because it's the last king of Judah.
The murder of his kids or something.
Yeah. So it's interesting though, because you have Tzedek. We've talked about Tzedek being connected to Jerusalem. His name is Tzidkiyahu, right? That's the justice of God, the Tzedek of Adonai. And you have this promise, Beshalom Tamut, in peace you will die. Alright, so let me just check what other...
But it's a very strange promise. I think this is a diversion from what you're trying to say. But he gets taken captive, he gets taken into Babylon, and does he die in peace? Yes, he does die in peace, but he dies in captivity, having seen his kids murdered.
Right.
Or blinded, whichever.
Well, maybe he was just afraid of a brutal death.
Was he blinded?
He's blinded.
Who's blinded? He said Zedekiah is blinded. And the last thing he sees before he has his eyes taken out is the murder of his kids. It's not a very shalom death.
No, but at least his body wasn't desecrated like Saul's, where your head's cut off
right.
And hung from a wall, that kind of thing.
Right.
So it's maybe there's less shame in it. And it is maybe more peaceful and not being brutal. I don't know. It's given as a positive thing.
He's given as a positive.
But it could have been worse, basically. It could have been worse.
Because he shall not die by the sword, so I guess anything else.
Anything else is better? I don't know.
Yeah, but I think Jeremiah has a dry sense of humor. So.
He will die peacefully.
Yeah. Gary's saying Jeremiah has a dry sense of humor. Yeah, it would be great to reenact some of these stories and get the right actor to do that part.
He and Zedekiah would have a very antagonistic relationship.
Yeah, they're antagonistic. And what is Jeremiah smiling when he says you're going to die in peace?
He and Jeremiah, they hate each other, basically.
Oh, right.
Is the word for peace shalom?
Shalom. Uh-huh.
Shalom, shalom.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you die with your body whole.
Yeah, I mean, well-being and death aren't really two things you associate. Well, I guess you do.
For the Mongols and other people, it's very important whether the body is whole or not.
Yeah, whether the body's whole. That's
what you're saying here about the funeral fire and so on. So that's what it is, isn't it?
That you're actually going to be mourned properly and buried properly
is
very important.
Right.
Right. As opposed to someone whose body's dragged out and burned in effigy or chopped up or all these things.
Or just left lying in the road.
Yeah, that are more shameful and not fitting for a king. So in that sense, it's there. I think the other main thing that's connecting these passages from our passage is a promise to Abraham that kings will come from him. So there's that any kind of king passage that has covenant connected to it will be linked to Genesis 17. And our time is up. All right. I'm just trying to give us something different than mutilating bodies in war to leave on.
It's actually quite refreshing.
Is it quite refreshing? Don't say that, because that kind of makes us wonder.
Just go back to this name, I have known you by name. And in the same way, God knows Zedekiah by name, and he's going to make sure his death is suitable for a king. And in the same way, he knows every one of us. And
he'll make our deaths suitable.
Well, I wasn't thinking of death. I was thinking just of this incredible truth, which gets repeated so often, I have known you by name, and it goes all the way through.
And then the command to walk before me, have a relationship with me, be blameless, and I'm gonna have a covenant with you.
Right.
Like, I will fulfill my side of the promise, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
And it goes right on through. I mean, you know, Yeshua, we are given his name. We have to have a relationship with him. Saul is given a new name. This name change, I think we need a whole Bible study on.
Yeah, it could be.
It's quite interesting.
Oh, we didn't even get to Galatians today. But you can all go home and do that this afternoon. So Shabbat Shalom, we're starting the service downstairs.
Just write for me in Hebrew the Hitaleh. It'll come here.